Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
For the first time since I started hosting my show from the After Hours Super Secret home base, which is now the After Hours Super Secret rental, the After Hours Super Secret Office. It would be a pretty good comedy. But for the first time, I am alone as I host the show. Penny is not here. Sugar is not here. There's no one here but me. That's it. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. For all I know, I could be the only being. Except some of you are listening. I know you are because I'm going to hear from you soon. And there's traffic outside. In fact, I just heard an accident. Oh my gosh, that is the worst sound, isn't it? You hear that crash. So I heard the screeching of the brakes and then boom, a car ran into something. I'm not sure what. I hope it wasn't the side of a building. But anyway, I heard the crash and I cringed. I used to live right on a highway, a six-lane highway, as a matter of fact. And because it's been such cool, low humidity temperatures all week, I've had the windows open at both places. So the office and the house. So funny to call this an office. But the windows are all open, and so I can hear everything that's driving by, and did just about 5 minutes ago hear an accident. So I can't see from where I am. So I haven't, I assume at this hour, because it's a largely residential neighborhood, there won't be sirens. But I can't see if there's lights or not. I just know I heard the crash. Or maybe the driver then drove off. I'm not sure. Goodness, did you see the story about the Giants punter with a hit and run? Was it 9 o'clock in the morning and the guy's already under the influence of alcohol? Oh, dear. You want to talk about a bender? Anyway, it is our hump show, and it's the last hump show that I will do from the super secret office before I take a week of vacation and then set up the recording. I was going to say the recording studio, set up the mini studio in a closet. Maybe right now I can't get into my closets because they're full of stuff. That's where I put a lot of the stuff that I moved over to the new place. So I don't know where, I haven't figured out where I'm going to set up the microphone and plug into, to the router and do the show. And we've had really great success, with the internet service. Rarely had any interruptions, and it's been so solid and so steady, whether we're recording interviews, whether we're doing the show, whatever it is, we've had almost zero problems, and I need that to continue as we move to the new house. So a couple of cool things from today. I figured out where to put the chocolate. Woo! That makes a house a home, peeps. Well, that and the pets. And Penny was so, she was so peaceful and she was so calm when I got ready to make the half mile commute from the house to the office. It's weird to commute again. I don't know. Maybe I don't need to commute. Anyway, a half mile commute would actually be kind of fun. But she was so calm, and that's really the first time. Today was the first time since we moved into the new place that I feel like she's been real calm and not anxious. She didn't make any moves to follow me. She was laying down after she had her treat for going out for the last time, and I just left her. I told her I'd be right back, which is what I always say to her when I leave, even if I'm going to be gone for a while. Even if I'm going away for a week, I always tell her Mama will be right back. And so she just she just laid back down and went to sleep. So that gives this mom a peace, because finally the pets, I feel like they're a little more settled. That's a huge deal, right? The fact that the dog is calm. And today she spent time outside in the backyard, which for the first time in my life, I have a little fenced in backyard, and to be able to leave her out there and sit in the grass, and she was smelling everything, and she rolled around in the backyard because that's what she does. Usually it's in all the neighbors' yards, but today was in our own yard. To be able to allow her to sit outside also was really neat. I did take a picture. Maybe I'll post it. Although it's sometimes, I feel like I post way too many pictures of my dogs. And so my dog and my cat, I post way too many pictures of my pets. So I kind of feel like at some point people are going to get tired of that. But it was just such a peaceful scene. It's quiet at my new place because it's away and up off the highway. And she was hanging out in the backyard, not feeling anxious and having to sit right next to me. And she didn't need to come to work with me. So no more take your pets to work day. For the first time in 3 months. Well, 3 months and a week. So for the first time in nearly 13 weeks, no take your pets to work. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. But if you want to send your questions for Ask Amy Anything, which is a part of the Hump Show every week, well, you can do that on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, and then also on our Facebook page. So look for the bright orange box. It's there every week. For those of you who are relatively new to the show, this Hump Show is our middle show of the work week. And we do have a bunch of stuff, it's a technical term, a bunch of stuff to throw out there that has nothing to do with my pets or the fact that I unpacked 6 boxes in the kitchen today. It's enough to make a girl giddy. After getting that refrigerator cleaned, now I can actually focus on putting food and other things away in the cupboards, though all of them need to be cleaned out as well. And because we're starting the show on such a pleasant note, I will not tell you yet what else I discovered in the house. This was on Tuesday morning as I was getting ready to go to bed after the show. So I was back at the house and I brushed my teeth. And yeah, I'm not going to tell you right now because it'll ruin this really sweet and pleasant start to the show. But I will. This show has got these moments that are guaranteed to gross you out. Well, there's another one. Just wait. But for now, we're all playing nice. So send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. If you have some home ownership questions for me, I'm happy to answer them, although I don't feel like I'm yet qualified to do that. So they have to be specific to my little home that I've owned for not even a month. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. We're going to dive into our first interview coming up in 15 minutes here. We're really excited to welcome Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe. He's been covering Major League Baseball for nearly 2 decades. And I don't know about you, I needed someone to interpret what it is that we heard from Rob Manfred on Monday night and then the instantaneous reaction from the players across the board. I mean, uniformly across the board. It was this loud, raucous, angry response to what Rob Manfred said on Monday night on ESPN. Now, we played the audio. Maybe we can even play it again. But you had not just his statement walking back that he was 100% sure there would be baseball this year, but you also had the near uniform response from the players and the union. And so I use my air quotations when I call them this, but the latest developments in Major League Baseball, I need an interpretation. So Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe will join us coming up in our very next segment. We'll have an opportunity to pick his brain. It's a guy that I've known for a long time, but also really respect him for his baseball knowledge, not just in Boston, but across the country. So Pete Abraham is straight ahead here on CBS Sports Radio. We didn't have a chance. Well, I should say we didn't have a chance. We were talking about ice cream on the last show, but I didn't get to the fact that the WNBA will be returning. I should say returning. They've already had their draft, but they haven't yet played any games. So the start of their season was postponed, similar to the way that Major League Baseball is. They now have a plan in place, relatively short for their regular season, but it's 22 games, and they also will be in Florida, though not in Orlando, but in Bradenton. There's, you maybe have heard of it, the IMG Academy. It's kind of young protege athletes in different sports who show potential really early, and they get specialized training, and it's a very famous academy. It's been there for a long time. So the IMG Academy is in Bradenton, Florida, and that right now appears to be the one site that will host all of the regular season games as well as the postseason in October. So they've got their own plan, and one key piece of it is that the players are getting paid 100% of their salaries. Even though they're playing 14 fewer games, they're going to be paid for all of them. So they normally start, or would have tipped off May 15th, so normally start in mid-May. And instead now they had their draft and they've been working on a plan. Lots of different scenarios similar to the NBA, similar to the NHL. And now they've got one that they believe is the right fit or as good as they can possibly come up with. And that's kind of the deal, right? There's no such thing as perfect when it comes to sports or when it comes to entertainment. In 2020, we've had to lower the bar. It doesn't mean that we can't enjoy the events. It doesn't mean that we can't still appreciate them. It just means they likely aren't going to look and sound the way that they have in the past. And I know it's still a great debate about whether or not fans should be allowed into stadiums and arenas, on courses, how they should be welcomed back if fans are to be given a choice, and whether or not there should be contingency plans in place if there is a second wave of the virus later in the year. And so there's a lot of questions for which we do not have answers, but isn't that the same? Isn't that the same as it's been now for 3+ months? Way more questions than we have answers. And history might give us those answers. But for now, we're all flying blind, all of us. So the WNBA has got its return to play. And how about this? The NBA has put out a huge, I don't know if you should call it a memo. It's a manual. Over 100 pages that meticulously goes over every detail. They thought of everything, down to the ping pong tables and the fact that the players cannot engage in doubles ping pong. They can only play ping pong solo, one on each side of the net. I mean, every detail of what they expect from the players inside this Disney bubble in Orlando once they return. Of course, there's a lot of it that has to do with the virus testing, but it also goes into the housing. It goes into the punishments. If a player gets caught leaving this bubble, I mean, it is meticulous. I'll just be honest, there's no way I'm reading 100+ pages. So I've been getting a lot of the highlights from various insiders. But one thing that I think is fascinating, and I don't know if this falls under the category of snitches. I'm not really sure. But there is a hotline that's being set up where, and I don't know if it's fans, I don't know if it's innocent bystanders. I think it's actually people from inside the NBA community. I guess it could be a combination of all three. The NBA is setting up an anonymous hotline so that violations of the protocols can be reported. What about that? If you are a member of a particular team, and you see an opponent try to sneak out. It's supposed to be a dry campus. He sneaks out. Do you call and report it? Or if you are an innocent bystander, someone who just happens to be going on your merry way in Orlando. Maybe you're jogging, maybe you're bike riding, whatever you're doing. And you see a player that you recognize outside the bubble. Do you call the anonymous tip line? This is a document unlike we have ever seen. Now, there are also protocols in place for what happens with positive tests and how they will handle positive tests inside the bubble. But this is extensive. This is, I dare say, just the tip of the iceberg, though. When we have the NHL come back, NFL, potentially college football, and I don't know if it's going to be the individual conferences or if it's going to be the NCAA, but there are going to be massive protocols there, and they have to be outlined for a couple of reasons. Number one, so everybody knows what to expect. It's like an employee handbook. We just got an email from the company recently saying, you have to read through this section of the employee handbook and sign, but you have to verify on your HR account that you've read it and that you acknowledge, and then you're responsible. Even if you didn't read it, you are responsible for what's in that document, and therein lies the second reason, liability. These leagues, these companies, I mean, it may happen when I go back to work at CBS Sports Radio headquarters, that there is a manual for protocols that if you acknowledge that you've read it, that you accept it, but you don't follow it, well, then the company can't be held liable. No doubt there is a piece of the liability in here as well, but also because everybody needs to know they're on the same page to start. And so it's fascinating as we'll go over some of the protocols. I'd love to hear from you on our hump show, but if you can only post once, then send your questions to our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, or our Facebook page, your questions for Ask Amy Anything. I love all your ice cream responses. It was fun to have a respite, kind of a wandering off of the beaten path and talk about ice cream on the last show. I think for the foreseeable future, all of my Twizzler Tuesday questions will be of the food variety. But your questions for Ask Amy Anything don't have to be. So send those to our various social media sites, and we'll get to that coming up a little bit later on the show. Straight ahead, Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe, and I'll ask him these questions about what we saw on Monday night between the commissioner and the players and where that leaves us and why, oh why, they can't just get stuck together in a room and come up with an agreement. So that's straight ahead.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Whether it's a tactic for negotiating, for trying to get both parties back to the bargaining table, or whether that is the honest truth that we should no longer be confident in a 2020 baseball season, whoo, it feels darker than ever between the union and the owners, with Rob Manfred spending that time talking to Mike Greenberg on ESPN on Monday. It feels bleak. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. We want to get to the bottom of it. What do these latest developments mean for America's pastime, quote unquote? We're pleased to welcome Pete Abraham, longtime baseball reporter and insider from the Boston Globe. And Pete, we have this weird reversal from Commissioner Manfred. Last week, of course, he was 100% confident because he could mandate the season under that March agreement and he could set a start date. And now his confidence has waned. I don't understand why, and I don't know what changed, Pete, but what sense can you make of this?
Well, it seems like that baseball, the ownership and Commissioner Manfred are worried about a grievance being filed by the union that they bargained in bad faith and that could cost potentially millions of dollars, if not $1 billion, if it's settled that way. Now, this is something that's always on the table when you're talking about labor agreements. And baseball now wants at the 11th hour for the union to say, well, we won't, you know, we'll give up those rights and we won't file a grievance. That's obviously a non-starter with the union. So to go from, you know, just tell us when and where we'll go out there and play, to now saying, well, we're not sure we're going to play. It's such a, you know, a couple, 3 days where everything has changed in baseball for the worse. And now it's looking like a very distinct possibility that there could be no season this summer.
when you hear the players blast Commissioner Rob Manfred for the way, well, not just his comments, but the way that he's presented this to the public, what's your reaction? The players seem like they're nearly unanimous in their almost hatred now of the way this is playing out.
Yeah, this is the first time in a while we've seen the union this together on an issue, and that has to be unsettling for baseball because in the past they've always been able to take advantage of that to some degree and push through, whether it was the collective bargaining agreement or other reforms, they were able to do things without the union really opposing it so much. And now that's obviously changed with the players unified. And like you said, AB, you know, basically their distrust of Rob Manfred. And that's a bad sign for baseball. But to me, and I wrote about this earlier today, you know, every other sport was able to put aside whatever differences they had and come up with a plan to restart their games once, you know, it was allowed under the rules of the pandemic and everything else that was going on around the country. And all of that was happened pretty quickly, pretty quietly. There was no rancor. There was no going back and forth and anonymous statements to the media and all that sort of thing. But baseball somehow couldn't do that. And you wonder, how could they not do that, given everything that was at stake, the massive unemployment, people dying, all of the different things that have happened in the country in the last 4 months, that they couldn't put aside whatever dislike they had of each other to do the right thing, at least for this one period of time. And it really speaks poorly of the people who are running the game, both on the union side and I think on the major league, on the MLB side of it.
Why? The major question is, why couldn't they do that? Why?
Well, I think this all goes back to the last collective bargaining agreement that the players agreed to and then quickly realized that they had signed a bad agreement, that this wasn't going to work for them financially very well. That's proven to be the case. Their salaries have gone down the last couple of years, which is unprecedented in the free agent era. And they seem to feel like they need to say no to everything now to try to get what they want down the road. But to me, you could have sat down when this all, you know, going back in March and saying, listen, this is an unprecedented time. We've never been through anything like this before. Let's both agree to just make a good deal right now, get something accomplished so we can start the season. And we won't look at this as precedent for our next round of negotiations. We won't look at this as a sign of weakness or a sign of strength. We'll just sit down and do the right thing. And then when the time comes, you know, we'll hash out our collective bargaining agreement in 18 months. I don't know why that they couldn't have done that. That seems like what the NBA and the NHL and all these other sports were able to accomplish that. And somehow baseball couldn't put aside their own selfish interests to do what was right for everybody else.
Pete Abraham covers baseball, the Red Sox for the Boston Globe with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. You recently posted on your Twitter a headline about how baseball is a great sport. So many people love it. But as we've learned once again over these last few weeks, the game does not love you back. Pete, is this reversible?
Well, if in the next 48 hours they say, hey, we've made an agreement, we're going to play, you know, come to the ballpark on July 10th and we'll have games, then yeah, I think that's the case. And people will forget pretty quickly all about these issues when they get to see Mike Trout play and they get to see, you know, Clayton Kershaw on the mound and Max Scherzer and the Nationals get their rings, all that sort of stuff. Everybody will be pretty pleased. But it's just, to me, it just speaks to a larger issue of how could they just be so self-centered and really like, you know, they had to know, obviously, what's going on around the country. How could they not make that their focus instead of fighting over money? It's just, I understand that it's pro sports and there are times when you have to fight over the money. It's necessary. But to do it now, it's just, it's unseemly. It's just, it's such a bad look for the game.
Rob Manfred still has this power, going back to the March agreement, that's given to him by the owners, by the union, to set the start date. And as the players have said over and over, tell us when, tell us where, we will show up. Do you think it's true that the owners and the commissioner are delaying right now because they realize if they would set the start date, there's plenty of time to get in more than 50 games?
Yeah, that's one thought, that people think that he's stalling to try to, so there would be less of a season and the owners would, they claim, lose less money with fans not being allowed into the parks. The players dispute that they wouldn't necessarily lose a lot of money without fans coming to parks. But the financial part of it aside, it just seems like there's too much maneuvering on both sides and trying to get the upper hand instead of just coming to the table and saying, listen, what do we need to do to play 50 games or 60 games? And then once that's over with, we'll figure out the rest of our problems.
Mm. Do you think that there are owners who are in dire financial straits that couldn't absorb the losses?
Well, I certainly, you know, every team is not the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Cubs,
right,
and have unlimited resources. There's certainly teams out there, I mean, at one point, the Oakland Athletics didn't want to pay their minor leaguers $400 a week, and they reversed that after a ton of public pressure. So there are teams out there that look at $400 a week to minor leaguers as an expense they don't want to make. So obviously there are some issues around the game, but you would also think at this time that the owners of the teams that are wealthy could say, you know, just for this once, you know, we'll work together. And if the A's or the Reds or some other small market team is going through tough times making payroll, we'll help you out. And we'll figure out a way to pay that back. You know, there has to be a way that these guys could have worked together so that all 30 teams could have successfully put their product on the field. And how did that not happen? I mean, it is, to me, there needed to be a lot more unity towards the common goal of getting baseball on the field and giving people something to watch and something to enjoy. And that just seems to have gone missing in all of this.
Yeah, they've definitely missed a window here where they could have been one of the only games in town, certainly one of the only top four sport. So, Pete, maybe this is just me, but I find it completely ironic that there's really no talk about the virus at all around baseball. All the talk is about money, not about the health and safety.
Yeah, supposedly they've pretty close to agreeing on the health and safety part of it, that the protocols are in place, both sides agree to them. They're going to play games to the degree that they're allowed to at their home parks. There won't be any fans. They have plans in place. Like, for instance, they wouldn't use the dugout. There would only be so many people allowed in the dugout. Mm-hmm. Everybody else would sit in the stands 6 feet apart from each other. And that there would be a taxi squad instead of minor leagues. There would be expanded rosters. They figured out a lot of those things. This really now is all just about the money. But of all the sports, too, Amy, this is the other thing. Baseball is set up to be socially distanced for the most part.
Right.
You know, it would seem to be, you know, as opposed to football and basketball and hockey, there's very few collisions. There's really no need for guys to be next to each other all that much other than the catcher and the batter. You would think that that's one sport that you could put it together pretty quickly and have games and cut down on, you know, the chances of somebody contracting the coronavirus.
Mm. Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe with us here after hours, CBS Sports Radio. In the other sports, we have heard, though, that there are some athletes who either think they've got family members who are high risk or aren't necessarily willing to put their health, you know, on the table like this. Have you heard any of that in baseball where there might be guys that aren't interested in returning?
Well, I do wonder if you know, Manfred says, okay, we're going to have a 48-game season. If some of the guys who have long-term contracts and have already made a ton of money will say, you know, it's not worth my risk to play a 48-game season, so I'm going to sit this one out. And the one thing I did hear, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, part of the solution they thought would be they would play all of their games in Arizona and that they would use the spring training parks and they would have like a bubble environment like what the NBA is trying to do.
Right.
And a lot of the players pushed back against that. They didn't like the idea of not seeing their families for that long a period of time. And that plan went by the boards. So the biggest pushback I've heard from the players was more that bubble concept than it was the idea of playing. But I would imagine if there are guys who have members in their families who are, you know, immunocompromised or have other issues, I'm sure they're going to have to very carefully consider whether they want to go out and do this.
So many layers to this, but baseball can't even get past the first chapter, which is coming to an agreement. Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe, please hang on. A couple more questions I want to ask you. Like this idea of crowning a World Series champion after 45 to 50 games, it's strange, right?
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
It was not even a week separating those two comments. Very public, very much out there for the baseball world to consume. Commissioner Rob Manfred first with Tom Verducci on the night of the amateur draft. That was middle of last week. And then Monday night on ESPN talking to Mike Greenberg. And of course, the tenor and the tone has changed. So that's where we are. And we're spending a few minutes with Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe and kind of trying to pick through the various layers of what this means for baseball and why they can't figure it out when it seems as though every other sport has done the same. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. For CBS. So we're continuing with Pete. Pete, thanks so much for hanging on. As this baseball season or the potential for a baseball season wastes away, It dawns on me that this is so nutty. Mookie Betts may not play any games with the Dodgers if they can't come to an agreement, or it could be a very small number of games. Isn't that crazy?
Well, I mean, you look at it from the Red Sox standpoint. They obtained those three prospects for Mookie Betts. Those guys are their property, and they are going to be for 6 years now. And the Dodgers, every game that goes by without playing, the Dodgers get less value out of Mookie Betts. And certainly they would have never made this trade if they knew they weren't going to get, you know, now what could it be, 50 games or whatever it might be out of Mookie Betts.
Ugh.
Now, if the Dodgers somehow win the championship, and I'm sure they'll feel it was a good deal, but if Mookie only plays, you know, several dozen games, whatever it might be, and they don't win the World Series, that's going to go back, you know, they're going to look back on that trade with a lot of regrets, unless he likes it with the Dodgers so much that he stays with them once he becomes a free agent.
The whole idea of having a World Series champion after a couple dozen games, even as you were saying that, I mean, I've considered it before, but hearing you say that, Pete, it sounds so ridiculous.
Yeah, I think I mentioned when I was talking about, I think I put it on Twitter the other day too, that, so what would the parade be, like a block and a half, or would you go to the mall to get your championship ring? Like, how would that all work? And I just wonder, like, if I'm sure, like, let's say a team that hasn't won the World Series, like the Seattle Mariners somehow win the World Series, I'm sure they'll be thrilled, right? It's the first time they've ever won a World Series before. But if you're the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Cubs, how could you, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, are you going to have a big display and get all excited? I mean, it would seem kind of farcical if you did something like that.
It would, for sure. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about this other piece that keeps popping up in my brain. How could this have worked any better for Alex Cora and AJ Hinch? I mean, they're suspended for a season. I guess you could throw Jeff Luhnow in there as well. But these two guys are suspended for a baseball season. They don't even have to sit back and watch anybody play baseball. Their entire suspension could be covered in a 2020 season that has no games.
Yeah, they've essentially missed nothing other than a few weeks of spring training. And the way that they decided that back in March was this counts. This counts as their suspension. So for those guys, I mean, I'm sure to some degree, you know, they missed the interaction with their players, and they're both smart guys. I'm sure they like to be part of the solution to all of this. But yeah, it's the only people who have really benefited, it seems like, would be those three guys. Mm-hmm. And when you think back about, you know, all the outrage about what they did, and people were, you know, people in Boston were very upset with Cora and all this other stuff, that all looks pretty insignificant. And when you look at what's going on now, right? I mean, guys are stealing signs. I mean, all right, well, compared to everything else going on in the country, that's fallen way down the list of things to be upset about.
Exactly. It's like we haven't heard about the Astros in months, which, you know, for good reason. Any chance the Red Sox will ask Cora back, or that, you know, they will work together again?
You know, that's the big question of Boston. And Chaim Bloom, who was very happy to have Alex Cora as his manager right up until January, has given the same answer every time, that the reason that Alex is no longer the manager hasn't changed, that they felt there was, you know, what he did in Houston merited his no longer being the manager of the Red Sox, and that hasn't changed. Now, he hasn't said absolutely positively not, we will not bring Alex Cora back, but he is kind of said everything but that. And I do think if you're a new general manager, you want your own manager. And not that Cora and Bloom couldn't have worked together. Maybe they would have worked together very well. But now that he has a chance to go out and hire his own guy, somebody he knows will be loyal to him, I would think if you're in his position, any executive in that position would want to do that. And if the Red Sox owners, it would be hard to commit to Bloom as your chief baseball officer for as long as they did and then say, well, that's great, but you can't hire the next manager. I would think, you know, he's going to want to hire the next manager. That would be a deal breaker.
Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe with us here after hours, CBS Sports Radio. If you don't mind, Pete, before I let you go, the Red Sox have had an image, a reputation. Well, Boston has, not so much the Red Sox organization, but Boston's had a reputation of having a core of fans who treat African-American players poorly, you know, who yell racial epithets at them. And we've had a couple of players who've come out, like Torrey Hunter, and said that is the case. Kevin Youkilis has said, hey, I've heard this. In light of everything that's happened, in light of the change, you know, the change with the manager and ownership and everything that's happened over the last couple of decades, how much do you believe it's changed in Boston?
I don't think it's changed enough. And the Red Sox, it's not just the fans. The Red Sox, as an organization, have had a very poor reputation. They were the last team to have a black player on the roster. It wasn't until 1959. There's that story from long ago that they had a tryout with Willie Mays at Fenway Park, and the owners at the time didn't want anything to do with Willie Mays. So there's things like that that have gone down in history. They had an incident in spring training in the 70s when players weren't allowed into a certain club in Florida, but all of the white players were. So there have been things that have gone on around the Red Sox. This particular ownership group over the last 20 years has done a lot to try to get past that with what they've done. But the lingering issue in Boston has long been racism. And as I covered the Yankees and the Mets before I covered the Red Sox, and I knew a lot of players around the game who would say they didn't want to play for the Red Sox, or when they did play against the Red Sox at Fenway Park, that was the one place where they heard things that they didn't hear anywhere else. And I don't know what you can do other than when that happens, to eject those people from the park and set an example that you hope other people will follow. But the Red Sox, as an organization now, are being very proactive. They're trying to do the right thing. But it's hard. How can you control the behavior of 35,000 people in a ballpark?
Right.
You really can't. You have to hope it starts from, I think, within the community and within the city, and that will lead to a better atmosphere at the ballpark.
Mm. You can find Pete on Twitter at Pete Abe. Lots of great experience, perspective covering the Red Sox for the Globe since 2010, even longer in the greater sport overall. And I appreciate your candor always, Pete. It's great to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Amy.
Great information from Pete Abraham. I always appreciate his passion as well, as the guy I've known for a long time, going back to my days when I was covering the Red Sox on a consistent basis in 2004, weirdly enough. Well, not weirdly enough, but that was right before I made my jump to network radio and didn't then cover one particular team, but I was working in Providence and grew up listening to Boston radio and watching the sports coverage from that city as someone who lived in Concord, New Hampshire when I was a kid. And Pete brings out some really great points, but also as someone who's inside the baseball world, doesn't have the answers either. I mean, we're all trying to figure it out, and why is the major question. Why can't they set everything else aside? As much as it requires laying down your stubbornness, laying down your pride, taking concessions. I mean, that's what many of us have done as Americans over these last 3 months. I'll say it again. I've said it so many times. No one wants to take a pay cut. No one does. And in the rarest cases, and I would say it's probably a pretty slim minority, there are some industries where it's not necessary. But sports is not one of them. And I really wish that baseball could see the bigger picture, or would at least consider the bigger picture. They're not naive enough to ignore it. It's not just about the players or the owners and their pocketbooks and their salaries and their revenue. How about the thousands and thousands of employees who work at stadiums, whose industries are tied to the baseball team or the baseball franchise in their city? There are so many people whose jobs are tied to the sport of baseball and to the sports industry as a whole. So it's unfortunate that they can't come to an agreement, or at least at this point haven't been able to come to an agreement. I don't think all hope is lost, but it does feel like hope is dwindling. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. And you're submitting your questions for Ask Amy Anything. Here's a question I want to throw out to you. I know last night it was ice cream. Tonight it's actually a sports question. Because as I think about the events that have come back, the sports that have come back, and remember, there's baseball going on in Korea. They've been doing it without fans. NASCAR had, 1,000 fans at Homestead this weekend? Invitation only. They're expecting to have 5,000 fans dotting the grandstands at Talladega coming up this weekend, or coming up this week. So there are places where fans are allowed in limited numbers. But in terms of full stadiums, we may not see that the rest of 2020. Now we may. I can't predict the future. But we may not. When you consider the four sports, major team sports. I guess you could throw in MLS. If we're going to do a poll, though, it would be hard to do because you also have college football along with the NFL, maybe soccer, baseball, NBA, NHL. Which sport will be missing the most without fans? Which sport will be crippled the most, be hurting the most without fans in the stands? Which sport will feel like a lame substitute without fans in the stands? Of those ones that I just mentioned, or maybe you have another one in mind. But again, on Twitter, on Facebook, you can answer the question. No fans in the stands cripples which sport the most? And you can also send your questions for Ask Amy Anything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.